This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've just been discharged from hospital with some new medication, but you're not sure if it's safe alongside the prescriptions and vitamins you already take. Right now, you'd probably have to make another trip to the chemist or book back in with your GP. But what if the pharmacist was right there in the same clinic, working side by side with your doctor? That's the future being discussed by the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, and it could change how Australians manage their medicines. To explain what this could look like and what's in it for patients, I'm joined by Associate Professor Jean Spinks, Centre for Business and Economics of Health at the University of Queensland. Jean, thank you for joining us today on Joy Drive.
Thanks, Latham. Great to be here.
Can you start by explaining what it would mean to have pharmacists based in GP clinics?
Yeah, I think the main thing about having pharmacists in GP clinics is that it gives the consumers or patients another way of accessing advice about medicines. So we do know that the use of medicines is really essential for people, you know, with chronic illness, for example. And when you take your medicines properly, it really improves your health. Mm. But we also know that if things go a bit wrong or a bit awry, that you can get quite devastating side effects, or even have, if you miss a medication that you're meant to be taking, for example, that things can go wrong and you might end up in hospital or even worse. So we do know that having really up-to-date access to trusted information about medicines is vital.
Yeah. How does the system currently work here in Australia when it comes to patients getting advice about multiple medications?
Yeah, there's a few ways that you can access advice. So as you said earlier, the most common way is probably to pop down to your local pharmacy and have a chat with your pharmacist, or to pop in and see your GP. So that's the typical ways, I guess, that we're getting information. There are some other more specialised services for people who take more medicine. So yeah, five or more medicines is generally the cutoff. And if you're someone who's taking that amount of medicines, you might be suggested by your GP to have a medicines review, for example, with a pharmacist. So you might sit down with a pharmacist in your home or possibly in the pharmacy and go through all the medicines that you're taking and get a bit more advice and sort things out in case some of the medicines are interacting with each other, or something's been missed in the system.
Yeah.
So by having a GP, by having a pharmacist in the general practice, it gives consumers another way to access this information. The other thing about this model that we've just been trialing is potentially trying to proactively find where the system has let someone down, and that the medication list isn't potentially ideal, so that a pharmacist and a GP together can work with the consumer and sort out any issues that may potentially lead to harm. So rather than waiting for something to go wrong and for someone to turn up at a hospital, to actually proactively identify some of these problems is a way of making sure that people are kept safe in the first place.
Yeah, and is this what you found in the large trial that was recently run in Queensland regarding this approach?
Yeah, well, we can't talk about it too much at the moment. It's still a bit secret squirrel because we haven't published our results as yet, but I can definitely talk in general terms about what we've been finding, and that the model has been really well taken up by the general practitioners and by the pharmacists that were working in general practices. And we also had a lot of consumer input about what they feel about the whole process as well. So what we did is actually trial this sort of proactive model of care, and it was in 40 practices across Queensland. And one of the key things that we discovered is that a lot of the success of the program depends on the relationships between the general practitioners and pharmacists. I mean, surprise, surprise, trust relationships are important, not only between doctors and pharmacists and their patients or consumers, but also between the practitioners themselves. And so we do know from other research that doctors are more likely to take up recommendations from pharmacists that they know, that they communicate more regularly with. And so that could mean a win-win for everyone involved in that situation. So we found also that consumers want to be more involved about what this model of care might look like. So that proactive part of the role of the pharmacist working in general practice is one part of what they may do, mm-hmm. but we're yet to decide exactly what that looks like. They may also do things like sitting down with people and undertaking a review and having a chat about understanding of people's medicines. They might also sort out when, for example, someone goes to hospital and they come back and all their medicines have changed, they can help with the patient and with the GP to understand, well, what has been changed and what do we need to update in the system just to make sure that everything's kept as it should be.
Yeah, I was just actually thinking, my background's in teaching, and I was thinking about the connected services around supporting children with additional needs. I'm thinking it was a similar model in the sense that when I had a psychologist that worked part-time at the school and a speech therapist, and having them part of the school, it actually, as you were saying about how the doctor and pharmacist relationship, it actually strengthened the teaching approaches that I was able to deliver in the classroom, because I was able to access those resources around trauma-informed practice if it was around children with severe behaviour, or if it's around children that had some language difficulties around how to get the support from a qualified speech therapist. So I was just seeing the similarities there and how this model is already happening in some cases outside of, I guess, the medical field, but other professions do this.
Absolutely. And so it just seems timely that why wouldn't you include a pharmacist in that mix? You know, as you're saying, that those trust relationships can really enhance the whole program of care for an individual. And so having those interconnections when the consumer wants that, when that's something that they would prefer, can really strengthen those relationships. And you can have a psychologist, a physiotherapist, you know, a nurse practitioner, as well as your GP, all kind of sharing in that care around the person. And that potential, especially for LGBT consumers as well, you know, those trust relationships may be just a lot more safe and provide a welcoming environment to discuss any issues.
Yeah, absolutely. We're chatting with Associate Professor Jean Spinks from the University of Queensland about a proposal to embed pharmacists in GP clinics, a model already used in countries like the US, the UK, Canada and New Zealand. Just on that, like, because they are in place in those countries, what have we learned from those examples that we could potentially apply here or maybe avoid?
That's right. Look, we do, and we do have some pharmacists already working here in Australia in general practices. So probably around 200 or 300 pharmacists on a regular basis. So we have already looked at a lot of the models that are working overseas, and they're working really well. Of course, different countries have different healthcare systems. Like, for example, the NHS in England, all of the staff, the doctors and the pharmacists are all then employed by the National Health Service. And that's a little bit different to Australia, where we've got pharmacists and GPs working in essentially small businesses. And so we need to tweak what's happening, you know, that's been working successfully in other countries, to make sure that it works in our environment as well. And that probably means looking at the adequacy of the workforce across the board as well, to make sure that we've got enough GPs and pharmacists, not only to cover what they're doing at the moment, but any roles or expanded roles that they might undertake in the future.
Yeah. I've just got a text in here. Mark from St Kilda just messaged that he's not sure about this idea. He's worried that it might just add the cost of seeing a GP. Is that what you would find from other jurisdictions, that it did add to the medical costs of people, you know, say from the US or the UK? Or, you know, are there potential savings here?
I think from a consumer perspective, there's probably potential savings. My understanding of the RACGP model would be that there wouldn't be an additional charge to see the pharmacist in the general practice. So I think the RACGP model being proposed is that they would be funded by the Australian government and employed through the general practice so that consumers have better access. But Mark's right in that, you know, when you go into your pharmacist, at the moment in a pharmacy, there isn't any cost to go and see that person and have a chat about what might be going on. So that's a great question.
Yeah, and actually, I was just another one from Daniel from Preston was actually asking about how it'll affect bulk billing in Medicare, and I think you've just answered that question. So it's interesting how some of our listeners are concerned about the impacts around the financial costs of something around this model to the patient or to themselves if they were to engage in this service. Just Jean, what needs to happen next before we could realistically roll this out across Australia?
Yeah, look, I think that there's general agreement between all of the professions, so the pharmacy profession, the general practitioners, that generally this is a good idea. Mm. But the devil's a little bit in the detail, and we haven't exactly nutted out what that role looks like so that it provides best value for money. So a little bit more tweaking and negotiation around that side of things. Unfortunately, trials like the one that we've just undertaken in Queensland, they're large and they're slow and they're expensive. So to make, you know, to speed that up, I guess, you know, one possibility might be some sort of staged rollout with inbuilt evaluation or something like that to actually trial it, just to make sure that the model is providing value for money. But also, I think, importantly, to allay the fears of consumers and patients so that they've got a chance to have a say of what they'd like to get out of a model like this. As I said, with the trial that we ran in Queensland, you know, consumers that were involved in our research did have some concerns around privacy and they had concerns about their involvement. So I think the next step is to make sure that what we're proposing, not just for the doctors, but also for the pharmacists and most importantly for patients and consumers, is that everyone's getting what they need and in a cost-effective way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've written an article about this with Professor Lisa Nissen in The Conversation.
We have. Yes. So if anyone would like to know a little bit more, they can Google that and it'll come up on The Conversation. Yes. And we've written a little bit more about what we think of this model. But we think it holds a lot of promise, and we do hope that it's something that gets rolled out in the future.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll just clarify for our listeners out there that the title of that in The Conversation is Pharmacists Could One Day Work in GP Clinics. Here's what's in it for you. So if you want to Google that, that would be a great idea. Jean, thank you so much for joining us today on Joy.
That was great. Thanks, Latham. Thanks for having me.
That was Associate Professor Jean Spinks from the University of Queensland. And don't forget to check out her article with Professor Lisa Nissen on The Conversation.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.